Hello there, and welcome to the latest edition of the DF Direct Q&A show. And man, the drama just does not stop. It's relentless. Joining me to discuss the latest revelations, John Linneman. Hello.
Hey, Rich. I'm back from the Nordic countries where it was nice and cool and beautiful up there. And it's a bit hotter down here still.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, the heat has finally broken here, but I think you've got a few more days, maybe longer.
We'll see.
Also joining us, Oliver McKenzie. Hello.
Yes, I'm certainly jealous of the Nordic environs for their climate at the moment, but I'm suitably refrigerated with my mini split system in my apartment, so I can't complain too much, really.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess we should just crack on with our first question. So obviously the Xbox pricing situation is not great, to coin a phrase. And this weekend there have been suggestions that next generation could be even more badly affected. And there's been some questions raised about whether we should actually be proceeding with it at all. I'm just going to crack on with the first couple of questions here. Let's go for this one from Zephyr. Hi team, with the Steam Machine price drop... not sure price drop's the right book, the right way to be describing it. With the Steam Machine price drop and the yet another price increase for Xbox, I really can't imagine a scenario where next-gen consoles cost less than $1,000. This, I feel, will price many people out of gaming altogether, making it a quote-unquote wealthy hobby like skiing and horse polo. With this audience shrinkage combined with sky-high AAA development costs, it then seems like more layoffs and studio closures are inevitable. Is there any glimmer of hope here, or are we heading for a gaming market crash, the likes of which we haven't seen since 83? This question from Fake Ninjitsu. Kepler_L2, the noted leaker. Kepler just stated yesterday the PS6 bomb costs... bill of material, have gone up $200 since his prior estimate earlier in the year, about $760 back then, so I guess like $960 now. At the same time, Jefferies Equities Research is prognosticating a further 40 to 50% increase in memory prices in Q3 over Q2, and a 30 to 40% increase in Q4 over that Q3 increase, plus a 40 to 45% increase in 2027. Even taking the lowest range of all three, that gets you over the 2x further increase that Microsoft just mentioned. And this is on memory alone. In 2028, they only predict quote-unquote modest relief. So prices would still settle higher than what they currently are at this moment. My question is, how does gaming or even the CE industry survive this? The first response people have to this is that they want to move us to game streaming services, but I don't think the math adds up there either. That would require massive data center expansions to serve the gaming audience, and those computer parts would still be subject to those insane new prices. GeForce Now is $10 to $20 currently, but that would have to dramatically increase to account for the capacity expansion necessary. And sending all these GPUs, CPUs, memories, etc. for gaming PCs would be far less lucrative than for B2B purposes, such as AI. So subscription prices would also have to account for that. In the end, too many people would be priced out through this method as well. A combination of the investment fever breaking when it becomes clear that the profitability isn't really there and most of the AI industry collapses to some degree, plus governmental action would be needed to return to something resembling normalcy. People in the AI/tech industry dramatically underestimate the level of backlash and anger people will have for them by 2028 and how well that will manifest politically. Well, that's kind of, let's just park the politics for a moment. Let's just talk about the gaming side of things at this point. So the immediate part of this, the immediate thing that's concerning people is basically the concept of whether next generation is viable, sustainable, whether it's even going to happen at all. And I'm just sort of still taken by this concept that gaming becomes a wealthy hobby like skiing and horse polo. John, should we head to the stables?
Yeah, so before we get into that, though, I have to ask, have you engaged in horse polo, Rich?
No, I mean, it's just completely random. I love it. Skiing, I can kind of understand, but horse polo, that's something quite extraordinary. Obviously, you know, it's a big topic here, one which the extent to which we're able to appropriately handle it with some level of informed opinion is difficult because obviously the dynamics of the market are changing seemingly on a week-to-week basis here. But I think one thing is clear. The cost of making a console is becoming more and more expensive, possibly prohibitively expensive. We've had a heads up from Microsoft already. It's like, whoa, hey, we're going to be needing to come up with some really quote-unquote innovative pricing models here. But ultimately, the way to pay for the next generation consoles is going to be, well, to pay for them. And they're going to be very expensive one way or another. What do you make of all of this?
Wow, there's so much going on here. And it's extremely frustrating to see because we're reaching a point that I'm not sure I ever predicted we'd be in, where gaming really is slowly becoming borderline unaffordable, right? Like, things are not going well for a lot of households already. And we've never seen this in the history of the gaming medium where consoles would so sharply increase in price as opposed to decrease. This is the first time this has happened like this. And it's now reaching the point where I would say a lot of these things are unaffordable. Like, how does Microsoft, and this applies to everyone, I'm just using an example because Xbox just increased in price. How do you take a console like Xbox Series X and say, oh, now it's like $800 or whatever it is? It's 800, I think, right? With the disc drive and everything?
It's, yeah, mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, how do you even make that, like, sale to any consumer at this point? Like, yeah, this box from, like, 6 years ago now costs $800. That is something that I think most people just absolutely will not be able to get behind. Nobody, it's such a tricky thing because, like, what would attract customers that haven't already invested to it now that the price is so high? People are going to see that and be like, no way. I mean, PS5 and everything is in this similar situation. Apple hardware is going up. I mean, I feel like we're creating a scenario where a lot of people can no longer afford this sort of entertainment. As he noted, it's going the way of horse polo. And it's very concerning because, man, the AI industry is just destroying so much. And it's so obvious why anybody, including myself, would be very much against AI, because for whatever benefit there might be, it's basically saying, all right, now not only are we threatening your jobs, we're gonna get you out of a job, but you can't afford anything anymore because we need all the components. Everything's going up. If you happen to live near a data center, prepare for hell because it's noisy and awful and it just sucks up all the energy and water and everything from the community. You know, it steals things from people. I mean, what the hell is the good side to any of this, Rich? I have to ask you, like, is any of this worth it? Because at this rate, it feels like it's literally going to kill gaming as a hobby. And we almost just have to, like, batten down and just, like, focus on what units are out there already and just try to support that user base and hope that someday this AI bubble explodes and people stop wasting money on this garbage and we actually see it put into a new way. Like, machine learning is not going away, but there's better ways to use this, and it doesn't involve, like, gigantic data centers gobbling up the world's resources like this and making everything impossible to afford, right? How do we get out of this, Rich? Like, it can't continue like this. They cannot launch. I mean, they might, but, like, if they launch a PlayStation 6 and it's $1,000, especially with the cadence of releases we've seen this generation, I don't see how that makes any sense. And the only way I could see any of this working is if it's just, like, if they're able to somehow get the PS5 cost down again and PS6 essentially becomes, like, the pro model. You know, it's like a continuation. Like, here's these same games and here's a higher end version. Maybe it has a chance, but it just feels like I don't see how any of this stuff will work like it's worked in the past. Like, it feels like the end of the traditional console cycle and traditional gaming. Like, everything's so expensive. Game development itself is expensive. It's taking forever to make anything. I looked back at, you know, think about Square, just as an example, Final Fantasy, not a big popular series anymore. Not like it used to be. And one of the reasons given that Square itself realized is that they used to release them at a regular cadence, right? And that built fans. When you're a kid and you got one out every 2 or 3 years, you become interested in that series. But now, when so many series like Final Fantasy and many others, it's taken like 6, 7, 8 years for things to get made. That's not enough. Like, childhood's gone at that point, right? You're not making fans because you only released one of them. And it just feels like a real doom and gloom scenario. And that's why I'm ranting here, because I don't see a way out of this yet, especially when you see all of these sort of like indications that memory and storage prices are going to continue to increase dramatically, and there's no end in sight. So again, I don't know about you guys. Do you see any way out of this?
Well, you know, in terms of sort of AI, I consider this to be like probably one of the biggest gambles ever made by the Western civilization. It could go either way. It could be a game-changing thing that benefits humanity. It could be something that just goes completely wrong, and the crash would be something unprecedented. We've kind of gone from like really interesting research and sort of small tools into something that is turning into like this sort of gigantic beast,
right?
That's got such level of momentum behind it that whether we like it or not, it's happening. The question is the world that we're going to be living in afterwards. That's a big sort of issue from my perspective now, is that it's basically nobody has a clear vision of how this is all going to end up. So by definition, it becomes a gamble. That's very worrying on a societal basis. On a gaming thing, which is far less of a sort of hot topic, but obviously not within the remit of Digital Foundry, I think there needs to be a bit of a rethink. I think basically the concept... Here's the problem that's facing Microsoft and Sony now, is that we've got full convergence now with PC. The parts that are going into the next generation consoles, the parts that went into this generation consoles, are essentially the same core technologies that went into PC. What was the difference? The difference was that you had easy plug and play with a console, but crucially, those machines were cheaper, therefore more accessible. Now, you paid for it in the long term via, having to buy your store, buy your games, and Sony and Microsoft get a healthy cut. But now, if the cost of the machine is such that it's not accessible, well, then suddenly the whole business case for consoles becomes a lot more questionable. And I think a lot of people will probably be thinking, well, you know, actually, this is the sort of full bill that I'm going to be paying for this generation for my console. Maybe I should be moving over to PC instead, where I can be a lot more dynamic with my hardware, where I can actually get competitive deals on hardware. And
you sure about that, Rich? I hate to interject there, but the PC space parts are insane right now. Like, the prices are through the roof. Well, like an old PC that's weaker than the console from 6 years ago. That's not a good investment.
Really? Because, you know, over last week, you could buy an RTX 5070 for less than its initial retail price.
Yeah, but you could buy the GPU,
9070 XT for under £500. There are deals there. Basically, there is still a competitive market. The extent to which that is going to remain the case is going to be hotly contested. But the fact is that, you know, ultimately, if console is converging with PC, you've got more choice as a consumer in the PC space. So I think, you know, and the prices historically have been higher on PC. So, you know, that's kind of like my sort of short to medium term future. Longer term, who knows? Because nobody knows at the moment.
Right.
But obviously the platform holders are worried. Hence, you know, you have like, with Xbox in particular, they're literally positioning it as a PC of sorts. I think that's possibly a good thing, but also possibly a bad thing, because what's the differentiating factor at that point? In terms of like what can, I mean, I think it is basically the question of whether a console actually needs to have cutting edge performance in the ways that PlayStation 6 and Project Helix will. It could be the case that a stripped back console, maybe in Sony's case, based on the handheld APU, could actually be their route forward to replacing PlayStation 5 with something that's kind of semi-affordable.
Actually, that's a really good point, Rich, and that might be an interesting way forward. If they were able to create a machine that's essentially PS5 class software, but like now it's like Switch-like, right? they could conceivably continue development for the PlayStation 5 generation, keep that going longer so people's investments feel safe. But then they also introduced this alternative model that has its own appeal, right? I think that's more interesting than just a beastly machine that costs a ton of money and leaves behind the old generation. I think they just really need to rethink the way we move forward here.
I think the problem is that nobody can plan anymore. Nobody can plan the the technical makeup of their new hardware, because it takes 5 years, 4 to 5 years to make a console. And what's happening now with the procurement of key components is that the price is fluctuating on a day-by-day basis. It's going to be really, really tricky, and I've no idea how they're actually going to handle it. I do think that is going to sort of result in a situation where people will be weighing up the pros and cons of just doing PC, because we are reaching sort of convergence there.
I think we need to reach the point where AI stuff is regulated to a degree where I think stuff like image generation should just go away, and I think the real true cost of running this stuff should be reflected in the prices that anybody using it pays. It needs to be like something that is not just available freely to use as it is now. And I think that might help bring the demand down, and possibly also, because right now AI businesses are not making a lot of money, are they? Right? It's all speculative investments. So like, what they got to come up with a way to actually make money to continue to operate. But then also, I think that involves charging the customer the true cost, which we're seeing with the tokens and such. And I also think that means removing certain types of functionality that's drawing huge amounts of like power and compute, right? And like scale that back and just find the things that are potentially the most useful and make it somehow viable, I don't know, without them losing tons of money and also reducing the amount of hardware necessary to power through it. And we also need other companies, even though it seems very difficult, to spin up fabrication facilities that actually can make things like RAM chips, right? There needs to be more competition in that space. But again, that seems to be quite difficult.
Yeah. I mean, this goes way beyond the scope of our competence for commenting.
Yeah,
we're talking about like this like gigantic sort of seismic shift in semiconductors, which we've never seen before. Oliver, what do you make of all of this?
Yeah, kind of putting the AI discussion off to one side a bit, because that's a big, I mean, I could talk for days about this, but, you know, I don't think it's particularly a bubble. And I think the companies are actually finding ways to make money by charging per token, like John suggested. Certainly the subsidized models that people have been relying on up until now, the models that are subsidized by basically saying, okay, well, the whales can take their usage and the standard user won't use nearly as much. And that model has not proven to work out so well, because it turns out a lot of users use AI models quite a lot. And so a subsidized $20 a month plan does not actually result in positive economics for those companies too well. So, but I think there are different models that are emerging, and perhaps those could be more lucrative. And people are, I think, making money pretty quickly on this kind of technology in the next couple of years or so. In terms of its impact on gaming in particular, the good thing about gaming is that the hardware, a lot of people already have gaming hardware. You know, we have like 93 million PlayStation 5 sold, like 30 or 40 million series consoles sold, something like probably in the order of 20 million, 23, 4 million soon enough. Nintendo Switch 2 sold. This is a really large market to sell games into, and the games themselves are relatively cheap. Like if you go back in time, certainly to like cartridge days or whatnot, games were much more expensive. Even if you go back to like the cost of a PlayStation 2 title, you know, a $50 PlayStation 2 title, that in inflation adjusted terms, I think is something like $85 or $90. So games nowadays are relatively cheap, even though the cost of making them has gone up enormously over the years. So I actually think it's not all doom and gloom from a pricing perspective necessarily. Obviously, the hardware has gone up enormously, but there is a large established base. I just think it really has this like long-term deterrent kind of stagnation effect on the whole industry. I don't think that will be reflected in like short-term panic. I think there are lots of other causes for concern in the AAA games industry. But for now, I don't think it's going to be so bad. It's just a problem when it comes to like next generation consoles, when it comes to trying to actually build out and expand that console user base. I think it's going to be a problem in like the next few years for sure.
Mm, yeah. I haven't really got too much more to say about this because we're talking about sort of global logistics here, of which we've got scant visibility. I mean, there were reports this last week about Micron basically saying, well, actually, we've been beholden to very, very aggressive sort of demands on our memory for very, very cheap prices. And hey, guess what? That's over now and it's never coming back. I mean, there's a lot going on here that we just are not aware of there. I do think there is obviously big issues on the viability of these next generation consoles, which I guess I've got a question for you guys. John, do you think they should delay next generation?
Oh, man, that's such a tricky... Like, my first answer would be kind of like, yeah, but at the same time, like, I guess with the uncertainty, will the $1,000 PS6 next year end up going up to $1,300 the following year? You know what I mean? Like... prices don't show any, you know, signs of coming down anytime soon. But at the same time, like, this, man, this is so hard. Because as you said, this console gaming requires this huge ramp up to new hardware. A lot of research and development time. They cannot just make sudden decisions on the hardware, right? Like, it takes time to steer this ship. So it's a lot of prediction. But because the market is so volatile, they can't predict things. And then you couple this with the actual software side of things, right? Where it takes a very long time to make games that support this stuff. And they need some software to show, like, hey, here's why you want next generation, right? And I think just purely cross-gen style stuff isn't going to cut it either. So, like, it's all this like crazy, like you need to aim so far ahead in the future, but then now we have this extra variability. So like, where do you actually land? And like, they may have no choice but to just go for it, because if they delay it, they're just, you know, potentially still increasing costs, and they're making it, they're dating the hardware, and it just creates more issues for the developers that are actually creating the software for it. Cause now the target that they were aiming for has shifted, and maybe that could be a problem for their studio in terms of actually making money on it. And I just don't know, man. It's so difficult. They may have no choice but to just go for it, right?
Yeah. Oliver, what do you make of this whole delay idea that's being put about at the moment?
If the unit economics don't make sense, and I've heard they don't make sense, then I don't see why you would do it, like John said. Because if you're launching a console, it's already going to be, you know, $1,200, $1,100, $1,000, whatever the price is, into a market where you're expecting that price to actually increase or stay the same. I don't really see why you would delay it. And ultimately, it might just be a better avenue to sell the console to enfranchised players, to players who will spend any amount of money practically on a new console, if it means the latest and greatest gaming experiences, and then lower that price if unit economics permit down the line, you know, 2-3 years down the line, maybe the console's cheaper. Who'd have thought it? Certainly that's something that we've seen historically in console generations. Not as much this generation. Perhaps they could go back to that, albeit starting from a really elevated price point.
I think that the problem is that decisions have already been made. And that's the key thing, right? Because the whole sort of ramp for getting a console out the door, it takes years, and then suddenly you've made all of those investments and you can't get any return whatsoever because you've delayed it. That's going to be tricky. And I guess we do actually have a precedent where we're pretty sure that a console was delayed for years, and that would be the Nintendo Switch 2. But the issue there was that, you know, Nintendo are actually looking at the success of their current hardware, their existing Switch 1 hardware, and probably made the call that, well, you know, we can actually afford to put off the launch of Switch 2 because we're doing so well with our current hardware. The question is the extent to whether that's the case for Sony and Microsoft. Probably not Microsoft. Question marks over Sony, I guess, because we've seen with these latest price rises that even PlayStation 5 has seen a massive decrease in momentum. Guess then the question is, what's going to happen with GTA 6, the extent to which that would actually make people get into the console space? That's going to be an interesting thing. You know, that is definitely a driver to make people buy a console, but would they buy a console if it's going to cost you $600-$700 or more? That's going to be interesting to see play out, but that's actually going to be happening at this point. crazy stuff. It's quite depressing.
Just really generally. Is.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. A question here from Marcus. Hi, I found him an exclamation point. With Apple hardware seeing some pretty massive price increases and with consoles, GPUs, SSDs, memory and handhelds all feeling much more expensive than they used to, I was wondering what your practical advice is for actually getting good deals these days. All of you have been watching the PC, console and broader tech market for years, so I'd love to hear your personal strategies. Do you wait for specific sale periods, buy last-gen hardware, track price history, go used or refurbished, avoid launch windows, or look for specific moments when a product is likely to be discounted? Basically, in 2026, what are the Digital Foundry tips for buying great tech without getting completely rinsed? Well, you know, actually, I'm just looking at my new PC, well, new-ish PC workstation here, and it's a mixture of parts I bought new and parts I got off like Facebook Marketplace, stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, it's... There are certain things that I'm comfortable buying used. There are certain things that I'm not comfortable buying used. And when that happens, I basically do wait for like, you know, like Prime Day or Black Friday, stuff like that. We had Prime Day last week. And as I mentioned just a short while ago, that, you know, there were some actually crazy good GPU deals, which actually better than Black Friday last year, which boggles the mind. And nobody has been able to tell me, and I have asked, how this is possible in the current era. I mean, a sub £500 9070 XT, this thing's got 16 gigabytes of VRAM. How are they able to do that when an Xbox costs, you know, is going to go up to like $700, $800? Crazy stuff. How is this happening? I'm guessing it must be some sort of inventory / supply chain thing that makes it possible right here, right now. But... yes, I mean, my sort of general strategy is that deals do come along. You just need to be glued to like the bargain forums and stuff like that. I think that when a new product is coming along, it's as long as you can actually get something close to the recommended price for it, it is typically the best route forwards to buy as soon as you can. And that goes all the way back to like 2020, I guess, with 30 series. We had that mining boom with the GPUs and basically, you know, a $699 RTX 3080, which was fantastic value, quickly became much, much more expensive. If you were there at launch, you could probably have got one at MSRP. New technology at launch seems to be reasonably, or seems to be, well, I'm not going to say reasonably priced. I'm going to be saying that it's, at least you'll kind of know what the price is going to be and it's likely to go up. I think that is my learning from that. Used consoles, I'm 50-50 on it because obviously you've no idea on how well it's been treated. But, you know, I think something like a PlayStation 5 or a Series X, it's typically the HDMI ports that go first from what I've seen. But, you know, you kind of know when you sort of look at a used product, whether it's been well treated or not. I do think there is a lot to be said for going used because especially with the used consoles right now, PlayStation 5, Series X, they're pretty well priced, basically. And bearing in mind that regardless of the fate of the next generation consoles, the current generation consoles are still going to be getting all of the games for a good many years. Oliver, do you have any thoughts on this?
I don't have great tips because I probably do not exercise enough restraint when it comes to buying technology, as I'm sure Rich and John can well attest.
Oh, yeah.
but I do try to be restrained on some things, like my PC. I don't upgrade my PC every time there's a new CPU or whatnot. I try to be reasonably restrained on that front and not upgrade every single opportunity there is to upgrade. And my Macs, on my Macs now, I'm on an upgrade cycle of like 4 years, 6 years, maybe longer, depending on the model, depending on the make. Like I just upgraded my Mac Studio after about a 4 year wait. Perhaps that's maybe instructive because I did make my purchase for the M3 Ultra Mac Studio I wanted a few months ago prior to the price increase, but because of the shortages, I'm only picking it up in the next week or so. So that's been quite a wait. So there have been unfortunate impacts on overall availability of computers above and beyond, you know, price increases as well. So that's been very unfortunate. But in general, you know, you don't get that good of deals, I find, typically on hardware these days. Oftentimes, you're lucky to be at or around MSRP with a ship date in like a few days or a few weeks. And you're kind of happy to be just about there, I find, with a lot of new technology.
John?
Man, these days, I think it's going to depend on how important games are to you and also how much you're willing to spend and what sort of things you're into. But I do actually think that in terms of like the best deals going, if let's say you've been out of gaming, you don't have a game console or you're interested in getting into it again, a used PlayStation 4 is a really good way to go, because we're at that point in the cycle where PlayStation 4 games can be had for like nothing. They're very, very, very cheap. And there's a huge amount of great games on there, right? That would actually be a really cost-affordable way to get into games if you were outside of it. Now, obviously, the maths change depending on your particular focus and how much you're willing to invest in it, right? I will say, though, that PS5 still holds an allure for people. Like my younger sister, they don't have a ton of disposable cash on hand, but they do enjoy playing games. They did get a PlayStation 5 a year or so ago, and it was a big investment for them, but they are happy with it. And I guess the main thing I've noticed there is that they have a, you know, thing. If you buy like discs versions of games, used discs and such, you can actually get some pretty good prices on game software itself, which helps keep costs in check. So some people might be okay with that. You know, I used to think like, oh, you may as well just go back to old retro stuff and you have a great time there. But even the cost on that stuff's gone up. It is kind of a tricky thing, but I do think used hardware from the last 10 years, you can get some pretty good prices on things, and there's just a ton of software to enjoy right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only thing I'd say about the PlayStation 4 is that it's very difficult to go back to any system with a mechanical hard drive after the current generation.
Yeah, but if you didn't have any of it, right? But I know what you mean. It is, when you plug in those old systems, man, whew.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say you could just, you know, get an SSD and upgrade it, but you can't anymore.
That's the main thing, man. It's like the PS4 generation, Xbox One, like you, or PS3 as well, compared to prior generations like PlayStation 2 and before, like the loading times and the experience of the console is so much snappier with the older stuff. But as soon as hard drives became standard, like the experience got so much worse. The more they tried to do, the worse it got. Right. Yep. And it, like, you hit power on a PS2 or a GameCube and it's just like, boom, you know, it just boots right up, 60 FPS menus right to the menu. There's like no delays, no pausing, skipping. It's instant. You can't do as much, but not much less than, say, like a Switch. Like, right. It's like very focused OS. The games just load up. You know, people complain about loading times back then, but it's way faster than games that from the PS4 era, I would argue. So it's weird how much slower things got. So that is kind of a strange point. So if you could afford a PS5, you know, PS4 software runs great on there, right? And it is cheap. True. So there's a lot of games out there to buy. So I still feel like maybe PS5 is the smartest choice at this point.
Okay, let's move on. A question here from Lilecto1. Less of a question, more of a statement, but I just wanted to let you know that all the way over here on the east coast of America, we can hear John's fiery, bubbling, palpable rage towards Rockstar's bizarre decision to skip physical media for the GTA 6 release. If I had a question, it would be, are you all right, John? Take a deep breath, my fellow former Ohioan. Well, this kind of leads into a topic that we kind of discussed last week on Direct, but I'm very interested in your opinion on this, John, and also the sort of potential ramifications of this decision, which is that GTA 6 will get a physical launch, but the physical launch is actually a box without a disc in it and a downloadable code. And I can see the reasons why they would do that. I could also see the reasons why it's an incredibly anti-consumer move that's going to be potentially setting a precedent that takes us down a pretty dark road.
Yeah, this is a tricky one because while codes in a box have been a thing for a while, it was mostly relegated to budget or reprints of Switch games because developers didn't want to print up those cartridges. Code in a box, I think, is worse than, say, an incomplete disc or a game key card, right? Because you have no actual access to the software outside of that code in that specific account. So it renders that disc basically like unusable, or it's not a disc. It's whatever you receive, you may as well just get it digitally at that point. But I really like, one, I don't think other companies should look at this and follow suit necessarily, because they're not Rockstar. I think Rockstar and GTA 6, technically, it's one of the rare cases where they can kind of do whatever the heck they want, and they're going to get sales regardless, right? There's almost nothing they could do to not get those sales. People are going to go nuts for it. So they can do this all day, and people don't care. But I do think it might actually have a more negative impact than usual, in the sense that because it's so big and everybody wants to play it, not everybody has great internet still. Right, there's still a lot of places you go where the internet just sucks and you don't have any other choices, right? And this attracts so many people to it. So they go to a store and have to download whatever giant amount of data it's going to be. That's going to not be great for some folks, and I think it could cause a little bit of a backlash. We're also seeing a massive increase in interest over physical movies and music. In the last year or so, people are starting to realize that these subscription services are perhaps not all they're cracked up to be. And as movies disappear, like Sony this week deleted essentially access to like 500 something movies, including Terminator 2, where it's like, oh, if you bought this, like, too bad, it's gone. And I think people are starting to reach the point where they just had enough. Like, these digital services, they were convenient, but they're becoming so expensive and stuff disappears and they can take away your ownership. People are starting to appreciate having a product again. Even younger generations, you see them more interested in this stuff than you might expect. But there's a problem for gaming in that that all hinges upon whether the console in question has the ability to use physical media. It still does now, but if we go forward, we might lose that. And unlike, say, DVDs, you know, Blu-ray, 4K, Blu-ray, CDs, which are open standards, anybody can make a player for those. Not anybody can make a console. So, I'm worried about it, and I don't like this precedent. I'll be curious to see what kind of, like, blowback they get. There's also, even though they deny it, which makes sense, I could also see Rockstar, you know, double-dipping, as they like to do. And then, you know, sometime later releasing, hey, here's a complete version on the disc now, you know, get it now kind of thing. And then you get people that buy it again. They're not going to tell you now that they're going to do that, right? Because that would just encourage people to wait. So there's no way they would say anything about that. But it could happen.
Oliver?
Yeah, I mean, I find the whole situation a little bit slightly galling, just because you can't resell. Obviously, the utility of a installer on a disc is somewhat limited, but the fact that you're buying a code in a box, and they're being very open about it and proud about it, like their listing, the Amazon listing I saw, it says very prominently that it's a code in a box. It's not a great development for the games industry. It's not a great development for physical media. And you do kind of wonder, why would you even bother? Of course, I know why they would bother, because it's a critical venue for sales. But it's something that I don't think should be encouraged. And I think Rockstar can probably get away with it. But it sets a really bad precedent for others in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issues here are, in terms of like the developer and the publisher. There was a leak last week of Assassin's Creed Resynced, Black Flag Resynced footage. And obviously that's not great, right? Presumably it's come from a physical disc. Or in fact, it may be from a review code. We just don't really know. But, you know, the amount of leaks we've seen from physical discs that have come out early or somehow got out early, I can see that developers would not be happy about that. Also, the concept of making a Goldmaster code, Goldmaster disc, that then goes for replication, that needs to, that basically introduces a deadline quite a way off from actual launch that developers need to have something to ship, and that causes issues for them. So, you know, I can see from those two perspectives, right, the concept of leaks before launch, the concept of having to create something that's shippable like weeks before the game's actually coming out. I can see why the developers may wish to shy away from physical media. The thing that sort of wipes out all of these arguments is that, you know, there's kind of like, in terms of like the desirability, the attractiveness of a physical disc, right? There's kind of like strata to it. Best case scenario, you have a fully realized game and it's all cool, and you can put in your disc and play away. That's awesome. That's what you want. You have a disc that you can resell, that you own, crucially. Nobody can take that away from you. That's your best case scenario. The next sort of strata down would be you've got a disc and it's an installer. That's not great for various reasons, game preservation, that kind of thing. But at least you've got a disc, a physical thing that you own, and you can sell it. And then you've got the code in the box. Now, I can't really see any scenario why you can't have the installer rather than the code in the box, other than to take away ownership from the consumer. I can't see any sort of reason why you would go for the code in the box. I guess it's different for Nintendo Switch, where you have Switch 1, I guess, where you have this idea that, you know, you've got to make a key card, and that's what they did for Switch 2. So, you know, that's the scenario there. But, you know, that's the thing that sort of worries me about this, the fact that it might be seen as a precedent. The concept of not having to press discs is going to save money as well. I guess in the case of GTA 6, it would be saving like quite a few million dollars there, simply because you don't have to press anything. But, you know, how that applies to other games, I don't know. I'm just worried that it's a further erosion in terms of actual game ownership. Some people are okay with digital, right? And that's fine. But, you know, physical has always been there for a reason. And I hope, you know, I guess the concept of a physical disc drive on the next generation Xbox is very much up in the air, but I'm hoping that Sony will still stick to it. Okay, let's move on. Question here from Screaming Lord Sandwich. Hi, DF team. Do you think GTA 6 is at risk of becoming the most overhyped game ever? After more than a decade of anticipation, have expectations reached a point where it's almost impossible for any game, even one as technically impressive as Rockstar's, to fully meet the hype? Games like No Man's Sky, Watch Dogs, Anthem, and Starfield all come to mind as somewhat recent examples of games over-promising but then falling short. I'll go to you on for this one first, Oliver.
I think it's a bit of a different situation just because GTA 6 is working within such established confines. Like all the games that you mentioned there, like No Man's Sky, Watchdog, Anthem, and Starfield, they were all based on really big and innovative game concepts, and GTA 6 is not really doing that. It's iterating on an established Rockstar formula, iterating on established Rockstar technology that we've seen work really well before. I think what it runs the risk of is just not meeting expectations in a way that's not quite as exciting as like No Man's Sky crashing and burning on release, right? It'll be a case of people making the same kind of complaints they make about other Rockstar titles, that they're too easy, that they have very simple like lock-on combat, they have very simple mission design, like GTA 5 had fairly simple mission design. Red Dead Redemption 2 was not hugely advanced over GTA 5 either, in my opinion. And then 30 FPS performance, possibly that players won't be too pleased with either. Potentially, we don't know the details there, but possibly it'll be a 30 FPS only title. But I think the risk that it fails to execute on like the basics of what make a Rockstar game good, I think that risk is very low. So it's, I think it's a different kind of situation than it would be for the other titles.
What do you think, John?
Same basically as Oliver. I do think this is a pretty established series. They know what people like. They've done it before. I would say it's probably going to be well received regardless. You know, Red Dead Redemption 2 hit it out of the park. GTA 5 as well, still popular. Only 4, I would say, had some backlash, and that was the time when they were trying some new things, right? Trying to figure out where to go with the series, evolve the gameplay, and do different stuff. And maybe that didn't hit with everyone at the time, but I do think that this is probably going to live up to expectations. Maybe not every expectation. There probably will be some disappointed people, but by and large, I expect it will be a huge hit.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, right? We've seen two trailers and we've seen a bunch of screenshots. We haven't seen much more. The trailers have been mouth-watering from a technical perspective, but ultimately, there has been no disclosure about what this game is actually going to be when you actually play it, right? So there's still sort of an element of uncertainty. At the same time, these guys have just delivered. You know, that's what they do. And the amount of money they've got to do it, you know, is kind of like almost a moonshot. You know, it's exactly what we said about Red Dead Redemption 2. What happens when you have a publisher that's got basically infinite amounts of money to make a game? And the answer is usually something quite special. And the trailers do suggest like fantastic things from a technical perspective. But from there, you're kind of like projecting about how all of this stuff is actually going to manifest in game. I think that was part of some of Alex's frustrations with the trailers, you know, especially when there was talk of gameplay in there when, you know, we still haven't seen what GTA 6 looks like. You know, what happens beyond that first cinematic? What are you actually doing? How does it present? We don't know any of this, really. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about that right now. But I think, you know, the track record is there. The technology is there. The money is there. The development that, you know, the development time and the delays they've had, you know, that they do seem to be aiming to make the very best product they can possibly do. So it could be the most overhyped game ever. We're just not going to know until it's out, until we've seen it fundamentally. I'm really interested to see what happens over the next few months in how they're going to market this, because fundamentally, they don't really need to do anything. I'm really going to be interested to see what they come up with. Okay, but yes, I agree with you guys that you can't really compare it to No Man's Sky or Watch Dogs, no. Anthem and Starfield, because, you know, it's a very different scenario there. Let's move on. T-Money58 asks, with perfect hindsight, if you were put in charge of Xbox and could time travel back 5 years, what would you have done differently? While Games Pass seems to have not accomplished its goals, is the bigger issue that the Xbox studios just didn't produce games that resonated with large audiences? What do you think, John?
Oh, man, I think you can't just go 5 years back. I think you need to go back much further. I do think the problems did start in the late Xbox 360 era. I know Don Matrick's kind of been a whipping boy, but I do think some of the choices he made there, this sort of deprioritizing first party games, this focus on Kinect, and then the introduction of Xbox One and the messaging around that, it started them down a pretty bad path. And I think Phil tried to recorrect a lot of this, and that's where a lot of the studio acquisition stuff came from as well. But again, even once you acquire studios, things, it takes a long time to build that stuff up and like really get that going, and by then it was kind of too late. And I also think stuff like I do think Game Pass was a mistake. I don't think they should have ever done it. It's not good for games. I don't think it's good for like the fandom around the platform, and it's not sustainable. And Microsoft obviously doesn't want to subsidize that forever, as we now know. So I'm sure people won't be happy to hear that, but I really think they shouldn't have gone down that road. I think Xbox Series X, the launch was kind of botched. Like, it wasn't exciting enough. And I do think, I hate to say it, but I put a lot of the blame on what happened with Halo Infinite. Not to say one game could save a platform, but I think in the case of Xbox, like you look at the original Xbox, I think if that had launched without Halo and Halo hadn't been the surprise gigantic hit that it was, I think it would have changed the fortunes of the whole brand. Like, Halo was very important then. And if they had done it, if Infinite had lived up to what we hoped it had been and it had been at launch, and that's a lot of ifs, I think it could have made a big impact there. Right, as like a new generation of Xbox, but the damage was already kind of done at that point. And man, this is so difficult to fix. We don't have the answers, obviously. The people running Xbox didn't have the answers either. And it's a shame because I feel like what they did with Xbox 360, the leadership during that era, the first 4 or 5 years of Xbox 360. That was the best era for Microsoft and games ever. And it was genuinely excellent. They were producing so many great games during that time, and they were making a lot of smart deals and just doing stuff to really further the medium in a really great way. And yeah, the Red Ring of Death thing sucked. That was not good for them. It's not good for consumers, but the actual hardware design and what it offered was perfect for that time. And they just never managed to get back to it. So,
right. There were a lot of lessons learned from the original Xbox. You know, they realized they needed to be competing with Sony on the third party stuff, and they went for it and they got it. And they had the advantage of being a year ahead of Sony. This is kind of like almost unprecedented. Oh, yeah. Probably will never happen again. So there were a lot. Yeah, that I agree with you, John. There was a period there where they were, you know, just producing a fantastic gaming product, and it was kind of unchallenged at the time. I think it was pretty awesome. But I agree with you in that, you know, you can't really go back 5 years, even with the benefits of hindsight, and actually sort of created a completely different Xbox. I think the seeds were sown much earlier. As you say, the problem is that, you know, Xbox Series X didn't really launch with killer software. I think that's the bottom line. And it kind of needed it much more than Sony did, because obviously, you know, people were coming out of the PlayStation 4 generation presumably quite happy with what Sony had done. They wanted the PlayStation 5. They had the existing games that would run on the new system. So Microsoft needed to actually take things to the next level. I think Game Pass was the gambit, and ultimately it didn't really pan out for them. How far back would you need to go? I guess you would need to go, as you say, basically to the tail end of the Xbox 360 era. There would have been like meetings within Microsoft where they were looking at the telemetry of Xbox 360 and making decisions on what would happen with Xbox One. And it was kind of like, well, Kinect is looking pretty awesome. Biggest consumer electronics launch of all time. All of the telemetry coming back is saying that people are using their Xboxes to watch Netflix. Maybe we should be doing something related to streaming and TV. Those were bad, bad mistakes that sort of filtered into the Xbox One era. And as you say, there was the dismantling of the first party studios, which Phil basically had to rebuild from scratch. Mm-hmm. And then there was the whole situation with 343, where, you know, at some point, I think that story will probably be told. We've only had sort of fragments of what happened there. But there is a huge disconnect between the first teaser trailer for Halo Infinite and the product that we actually got that arrived a year too late. There's crazy stuff there that we just don't understand, but you know, we are where we are now. And Oliver.
Yeah, not too much to add. Just to say that, like, at the time of the Xbox One's introduction and release, I remember thinking, terrestrial television, this is such a horrible bet. Like, at that time I hadn't watched terrestrial television in years, and I had no desire to watch it. And I think that a lot of people, especially young people, were of a similar mind. They were really glued into their streaming services and their YouTube, and they really could not care less about terrestrial TV. And I think that proved to just be like completely the wrong call. Also, just they made a lot of other incorrect calls when it came to the hardware as well, like going with a smaller GPU, comparatively speaking, and eschewing GDDR5 in favor of DDR3 plus the on-die memory. That was a mistake. Now, obviously, that was a mistake that Sony did not make, but they just made a slightly different bet in terms of what component availability would look like. And, you know, could we source? They ended up being able to source the higher capacity, I think 512 megabyte, GDDR5 modules that were necessary to actually ship 8 gigabytes of memory. That was not a certainty prior to, I think, February of 2013, or it was pretty late in the process they actually made that call. So that was just an incorrect call on Microsoft's part, and they ended up with a weaker machine that, even absent its Kinect sensor, cost, I think, about as much as the PlayStation 4 to produce, which ended up being a really just a bad combination of factors there.
Yeah, the ESRAM situation is kind of interesting, because it was developers hated it, by the way. And I remember speaking to somebody at Microsoft saying, I don't understand why they hate it, because we did exactly the same thing on Xbox 360 and everyone was fine with it. I think the issue was that, you know, basically Sony came along with a more streamlined solution that developers preferred, and then suddenly it becomes much more of an issue, right? Sony did with the PlayStation 4 design, they just kept it simple, right? And just gave developers what they needed. And they kind of circumvented the whole memory thing right until the sort of early parts of 2013, Microsoft were quite confident that they'd be shipping with 8 gigs of memory while Sony would be shipping with 4. And all of the, I've even seen developer documentation saying it would have 4 gigabytes of memory. But, come the hour, it was 8, and that was it. It was curtains. Yeah, interesting. I wonder just, how things would have changed if there'd been sort of different decisions made in that sort of 2010 to 2012 period. Anyway, final question here. This one comes from Dudley the Gentleman. Hello, Foundryman. Since component pricing is likely to be FUBAR for up to the next 3 to 5 years or so, how do you perceive Valve approaching their Steam Machine initiative in the future? Will this current iteration be the be-all and end-all? Would Valve entertain a separate Steam Machine Pro model? Oliver.
Geez, I think they will iterate on it at some point. I don't know whether that would be sooner rather than later or later rather than sooner. I kind of almost think that even like an RDNA 5 version might be justified, just on the basis that the Steam Machine feels kind of like dated hardware already. Whereas if you go back to something like the Steam Deck, that felt like very modern hardware in 2022. The Steam Machine rather in 2026 feels like hardware that's a little bit long in the tooth. Could use some replacement with more modern components, and RDNA 5 seems like a reasonable time to do that. But based on what Valve is saying, I kind of would expect a refresh of the Steam Machine a little bit sooner rather than later, maybe in the next like 2 or 3 years. I wouldn't be shocked to hear. That is, if plans for it aren't abandoned altogether in favor of something like just polishing up SteamOS and making sure that's a great experience for users across all kinds of commodity desktop PC hardware. That's another route they could go. But if they do end up iterating on Steam Machine, I would not be surprised if it's a little bit sooner, because I don't actually think you need tremendously higher-end hardware. You just need more modern hardware.
Right, yeah, I kind of agree with you on that, but John, I want to get your thoughts first.
Yeah, I mean, similar idea there, and also it's something like this I think is easier to upgrade, both in terms of selling it to the customer and also just in terms of the engineering. Like, the Steam Deck is such a specific thing that needs to have, like, this very tight form factor in order to remain portable, right? And there's more limitations on the power draw that you have to take into consideration there as well, since it's a battery system. And I think that just makes it harder to iterate on. Where here, Steam Machine is something where I think they could just have multiple models in time, without causing too much confusion there. And because it's a PC, it's like, why not? But I the thing about Valve, though, is you just never really know what they're going to do, whatever they have interest in, whatever their eye is on at the moment. It kind of varies, right?
I'm really interested in what they're going to be doing next. I mean, they've basically said to me that they're going to continue to do hardware, even though it's really difficult at the moment. And their rationale for that is simply that, people want machines to play games on, which I think is fair enough. I mean, the current situation with making any kind of piece of consumer electronics, if I was doing it, I'd be running for the hills. How can you do it? Where do they go next? I mean, to deliver the kind of things that they want from a new Steam Deck, they need to be on RDNA 5, really. I mean, I'd be very surprised if it wasn't, which means they need some sort of SoC to be made that would enable that to happen. And, I guess famously, Steam Deck, I guess with the possible exception of the Steam Deck OLED, they've never really had like a properly custom piece of silicon, right? And how they're going to do that then is a bit of a puzzle for me. I'm guessing there must be something in the works there, but that's still like a couple of years out, I reckon. And then Steam Machine, if you're going to be having a RDNA 5 handheld, you've kind of got to have an RDNA 5 based Steam Machine as well. Now, there are routes forwards to actually producing a much, much better steam machine that would still fit within that cube form factor. And it is just a case of having more modern CPU and a more modern GPU. I mean, we've got Navi 33 inside the steam machine there. Navi 44, the same chip used in the 9060 XT. I mean, this thing's running like 70% faster than a steam machine. And it's sort of like the next generation version of the same processor. But it's RDNA 4. Is that good enough? Surely you'd kind of want to be RDNA 5 for a proper generational leap. I don't know. A Steam Machine Pro isn't going to happen like anytime soon, though. But a new iteration of Steam Machine that's better suited to the games of the year, I can very definitely see that happening. Yeah. Right, so that's the way I see that one. That was the final question, therefore the end of the show. Please do like, subscribe, share if you enjoy it. Ring bells for whatever happens when you ring them. DF supporter program, though. Patreon.com/DigitalFoundry. If you like what we do, you want to support the team, please do consider that. Ad-free video downloads, ad-free website, early access to a bunch of stuff, early access to DF Direct, news updates to the team, an amazing community there, direct access to the team via Discord, all of that cool stuff. But that's all from us on this one. Thanks for watching and supporting Digital Foundry.